going to be very mixed across the UK on Saturday. And a couple of words on Sunday. Again, a mixture of sunshine and showers, but I think on Sunday, a bigger chance of catching those heavy showers, maybe some thunderstorms around as well. So make sure you don't get caught out in the rain, will you, Corrie?
I'll try not to. Thanks very much, Thomas. Well, now Heston Blumenthal and Hugh Dennis conclude their reading from Historic Heston, and a recipe in a 19th century encyclopedia of practical cookery reminds our 21st century chef of his love for Alice in Wonderland.
Beautiful soup, so rich and green, waiting in a hot tureen. Oh, for such dainties would not stoop. Soup of evening, beautiful soup.
Mock turtle soup. Peel 3 onions. Scrape and wash 2 good-sized carrots. Peel and wash a turnip. Wash and trim a head of celery, and then cut all these vegetables into slices. Fry them in 1/2 pound of butter till they are a nice pale brown. Put 2 pounds of leg of veal and 2 pounds of leg of beef into a saucepan with 1 pint of cold water. Fit the lid on tightly and let it stand at the side of the fire for an hour, keeping it just warm enough to draw the gravy from the meat. Then put it into a larger saucepan or pot.
Between 1800 and 1900, British society changed more rapidly and radically than at any other time in its history. In the first half of the century, the population rose by an incredible 73%. People migrated to the towns and cities in droves, searching for work and opportunities. The boom towns of the Industrial Revolution more than doubled in size. This led to what Disraeli memorably described as a convulsion of prosperity in Victorian England. The middle class was on the rise, ambitious but perhaps not entirely confident of their place in the hierarchy. And these new urban dwellers adopted very different ways of living and, of course, eating. They devoted a lot of their wealth to showing just how well off they were. Top hats became extravagantly tall and dresses much more voluminous. The number of domestic servants increased from 900,000 in 1851 to nearly 1.5 million a mere 20 years later. Food was also press-ganged into this one-upmanship, just as it had been by the medieval kings with their banquets of peacocks and pricey saffron. And the welter of contemporary books on domestic etiquette showed that the dining table was now a showcase not just for food, but for all manner of knick-knacks purchased to demonstrate the host's good taste. Fine china, candelabra, cruet sets. One of the gastronomic status symbols of the age was the turtle, or more specifically, the green turtle, prized as much for its lovely, rich, green-coloured fat as it was for its delicious flesh. The animal came, appropriately enough, from the waters around the Caribbean islands that have provided much of Britain's wealth. The earliest recipe appeared in 1732 in Richard Bradley's The Country Housewife and Lady Director, Part 2. Bradley was the first professor of botany at Cambridge University, and, as you might expect, he had a well-developed taste for exotica. But turtle dishes quickly made it to the mainstream of cuisine. One of the best barometers of the taste of the times is Hannah Glass's The Art of Cookery Made Plain and Easy. The fourth edition has instructions on how to dress a turtle the West Indian way. In the 1760s, 6 pounds of turtle meat at the Shakespeare's Head Tavern in Covent Garden would set you back £1.01, which was about half a craftsman's weekly wage. Despite, or perhaps because of being very expensive, turtle soup became a craze that lasted well into the Victorian age. In the 1880s, Britain was still importing about 15,000 turtles a year. The transportation was difficult and brutal for the turtles themselves. During the voyage, they were kept in large water tanks, and they tended to pine in captivity and lose weight. In order to prevent them from escaping, they'd be placed on their backs. Turtles weighed anything from 60 to 200 pounds and more, and manhandling them for cooking wasn't easy.
The Gentleman's Magazine reported in the 1750s that the King's Arms Tavern in Pall Mall had to remove the oven door in order to admit a 350-pound specimen.
And there's a remarkable 1874 drawing by Jules Descartes-Ferrat entitled La Décapitation d'une Tortue de Mer, which shows a stone-flagged kitchen with a turtle suspended from the ceiling and a group of chefs in white hats and long aprons watching as one of their number springs towards the turtle, sword raised high above his head like an unsaddled cavalryman determined to go down fighting. Originally, all of this surgical butchery went into creating a single course made up of a variety of dishes that used each bit of the animal, rather like Peking duck on a grand scale. The belly would be boiled and the back baked, the fins and guts stewed in rich sauces, but a tureen of turtle soup always provided the centrepiece. Over time, its popularity eclipsed all the other dishes. Mrs. Beaton observes in a footnote to her recipe,
"Some hundreds of tureens of turtle soup are served annually at the Lord Mayor's dinner in Guildhall."
Since the soup was so celebrated, it'll come as no surprise that a mock version quickly appeared for those who couldn't cope with the cost or complexity of making the real thing. It made its first appearance in the 1758 edition of The Art of Cookery Made Plain and Easy, using a calf's head in place of turtle meat. But Theodore Francis Garrett warned,
"There is a great deal of difference between dishes made of real turtle and those concocted to resemble it as nearly as possible."
And in London Labour and the London Poor, Henry Mayhew reports a street seller saying,
"I once had some cheap mock in an eating house, and it tasted like stewed tripe with a little glue."
Nonetheless, mock turtle soup became so popular in its own right that by the beginning of the 19th century it had been taken up by the French. The famous gastronomer Grimaud de la Reynière noted,
"Mock turtle soup has Parisian tongues wagging."
The starting point for the fat duck recipe was an old cookbook, bound in tattered red leather with gilt lettering. Volume 2 of Theodore Francis Garrett's Encyclopedia of Practical Cookery is thicker than a telephone directory. Browsing the time-darkened pages, my eye was caught by his recipe for mock turtle soup. Now, the name triggered nostalgic memories of soup that was sold in cans when I was a kid growing up in London in the 70s. There was a touch of pride, too. It's always irked me that we Brits are constantly knocked for our cuisine. I love the idea of a British dish that had made it into the classic French repertoire. But the soup's biggest attraction was that it reminded me of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. I love the surreal humour of Lewis Carroll's book, and the way that no matter how bizarre the situation, Alice tries to deal with it in a rational, logical manner. During recipe development, I often feel as though I've tumbled down the white rabbit's hole into some other world, where pressing questions such as how best to create sand you can actually eat seem entirely logical. To the fact that one of Carroll's most memorable characters is a tearful mock turtle who teaches Alice the lobster quadrille and sings Beautiful Soup was a powerful incentive to try out the dish. Soup is a great vehicle for creativity, and already I could see plenty of ways that using modern technology and know-how, I could enhance Garrett's recipe with a greater depth and complexity of flavour. But I still needed to find a direction for the development of the dish. I went back to Alice for inspiration, leafing past the White Rabbit.
"Oh, my ears and whiskers, how late it's getting!"
Past the Duchess and the Cheshire Cat, past the Mad Hatter and the March Hare taking tea, until I reached Chapter 9. And there it was, staring at me from Tenniel's classic illustration of the mock turtle. The head that stuck out of that turtle shell was a calf's head. The back flippers were in fact hooves, and a calf's tail dangled behind. Tenniel's fantasy creature cleverly alluded to the ingredients of the soup, so why couldn't I reverse the process and create a soup that alluded to features of Carroll's story? It's always an exciting moment in recipe development when you find that little key that just opens the door. More often than not, the rest seems to develop almost of its own accord. So it was with my mock turtle soup recipe. I could deepen the flavour of the soup and make playful reference to Carroll's contemptuous caterpillar sitting on his mushroom by combining the meat stock with mushroom stock and mushroom ketchup. And I saw a way of using the classical technique known as a royale, or a moulded savoury custard, to create some Carroll-style whimsy by moulding the royale into an ovoid, and then topping it with a small blob of swede gel, I could make what looked like an egg with the yolk on the outside. Precisely the sort of topsy-turvy egg a mock turtle might hatch from. The key detail from Alice that brought all the dish's elements into harmony, however, was the Mad Hatter's watch, which famously appears to tell the days of the month rather than the time of day. During the tea party, it's gloomily dipped in a cup of tea by the March Hare. I'd already created a dish in which scented water was poured over a stock cube wrapped in gold leaf, and I realised I could move this on a stage by fashioning the stock cube into a fob watch. However, in order to pack as much flavour as possible into such a small amount of stock, I had to employ some of the most cutting-edge technology and methodology that I use in the kitchen, ice filtering the stock, breaking it with a rolling pin and putting it in a centrifugal juicer. The final piece of technology was the rocket. Not Stephenson's steam engine that revolutionised locomotion in 1829, but a vacuum centrifuge. With its strobe and purple flashing lights, the rocket mesmerised my development chefs who took any and every opportunity to use it. It enabled me to create an incredibly intense essence, which we placed in specifically designed fob watch moulds. Tease a teabag style string into the top with a little paper tab printed with the words Mad Hatter's Tea, let it set, pop it out of the mould, wrap it carefully in gold leaf, and you've got a convincing facsimile of a pocket watch. Originally, the dish was served in bowls containing an ox tongue and lardo tureen, garnished with little cubes of pickled turnip, truffle and cucumber, along with micro parsley. Beside each table setting, a bookmark was placed, which is printed with relevant passages from Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, a brief history of mock turtle soup, and Tenniel's wonderful illustrations of the mock turtle and the tea party. There's a memento of Mad Hatter madness for diners to take home with them. The waiters would bring the watches to the table in a presentation case, from which could be heard the sound of ticking. Each diner took a watch from the case and put it in a teacup containing hot water, turning the water into a beautiful, clear, gold-flecked consommé that could then be poured around the contents of the bowl. It was a beautiful dish, but there was an aspect of its presentation that was just nagging at me. You normally pour into a teacup, not from it. So I came up with a notion of a capacious glass cup teamed with a specially designed glass teapot. The garnishes, egg, meat, truffle, pickled veg and tiny mushrooms, are placed in the cup. The teapot containing the hot water fits neatly on top and the apparatus is brought to the table. When the waiter offers each diner a fob watch, they place it in the teapot, swirl it around to produce the gold-flecked broth, which they then pour into the cup. Diners were given a teaspoon to eat with, either right or left-handed as a nod to Tweedledee and Tweedledum. But they were also free to drink the last remnants straight from the cup. The dish really had turned into a tea party.
Service, please. Okay, we're going to go on table 2 and table 16, followed by 17 and 24, followed by 33, then 39 and 42. And two mock turtle soup need to go to table 3. Thank you. Go.
Beautiful soup, so rich and green, waiting in a hot tureen. Oh, for such dainties would not stoop soup of evening, beautiful soup, soup of evening, beautiful soup.
Heston Blumenthal and Hugh Dennis have been reading from Historic Heston. The programme was abridged and produced for BBC Radio 4 by Jane Marshall Productions. And our new book of the week starting on Monday is Bonkers, the memoirs of Jennifer Saunders, a life filled with laughter and the occasional heartache. Well, the shipping forecast follows in a couple of minutes, and to take us there, sailing by. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Saturday, the 19th of October. There are warnings of gales in Irish Sea, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Rockall 988, expected 350 miles west of Rockall 986 by 1800 Saturday. Low 350 miles west of Shannon 984, expected southwest Shannon 986 by the same time. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking southeast 4 or 5, increasing 6 or 7, perhaps gale 8 later. Fair, then rain, good, becoming moderate or poor. North at Cirra, south at Cirra, variable 3, becoming easterly 5 to 7, perhaps gale 8, and south at Cirra later. Fair, then rain, good.